Reality Rant.
Oh, Big Brother. I don't even know how to start this podcast. You want to know why? Because I didn't watch the second half of the season. You want to know why? Because Time Warner Cable and CBS decided to have a huge fight and decided that people in Los Angeles were going to miss about 3 to 4 weeks of the Big Brother season. But more importantly, because the entire season was full of stupidity, racism, bigotry, idiocy. I mean, take your pick, folks. This was a Big Brother season for the ages, and I don't mean that in a good way. All you need to know is that this is the Reality Rant Podcast. I'm Eric Pierce of Gameshow News Net. That is Bill Hammond, and Bill Hammond will be your steward through this shitstorm that was Big Brother 15.
Yeah, dude, Time Warner did you a favor.
I'm understanding. Apparently, I've gotten lucky. For those of you who follow the podcast, you might be aware that there was one other season of Big Brother that I personally did not get to see, and that was Big Brother 9. Yes, lovers. Lovers in the Big Brother house. Not the X Factor. The X Factor, well, that had its issues too, but... Oh, I avoided 9, and I saw enough of 15 to know that, hey, maybe I should spend time on better things like crocheting or taking a shit. Yes, we're dropping the word shit left and right in this podcast. The box has been violated. Be warned. But there really is no better way to talk about Big Brother this season. This is the way this podcast is going to work, folks. I'm going to ask Bill questions. Bill is going to answer them. It's not really much different from other podcasts, but because of my lack of knowledge of the season... My questions are going to be particularly stupid, which is fitting considering the cast is at least 10 times dumber than the questions I'm about to ask.
Yeah, I mean, literally, once the season ended, I took stock of the whole thing, and this has surpassed season 9. This is now the worst season ever. And it's almost kind of like the curse of Star Trek movies, because I look at what I consider to be the 5 worst seasons of all time, and in reverse order, it goes season 4, X-Factor... season 11, the high school clique, season 13, Rachel winning, season 9, Till Death Do Us Part, and now season 15 is the worst one ever. By contrast, the last four good seasons were 8, 10, 12, and 14. So
okay, so more importantly, let me ask my first semi-stupid question.
Yes.
How good was Julie Chen's interview of Aaron Grease?
That was the high point of the season.
Yes, I thought so. Let's go into this a little bit, because all you need to know is that when someone comes out of the house and gets summarily booed, that's kind of fantastic.
Yep. And it didn't just happen with Aaron, it happened with Amanda, too. And you could see clarity dawning on their face as soon as they start hearing the boos, like, wait a minute, why are they booing me?
I get it, but you know what?
Oh,
we need
crap.
More transparency in these shows. There are heroes, there are villains, and the crowd should be allowed to react to each player in a different fashion. So, I think it's great that there were the boos, but do you think Julie asked all the tough questions?
I think she asked as tough of questions as she could while still maintaining her trademark poise.
Okay. Her trademark robotic poise.
Basically. I mean, she was much more emotive on the talk, you know.
Well, that's because she had surgery on her eyes.
That too. But I mean, when it's more a chatty, open forum where they can let their personalities flow, she was a lot more emotive and a lot more condemning of many of the house guests' actions. But she knew that she couldn't reveal any outside information to them, so she just... But she also knew she couldn't let them off the hook, so she walked the line as delicately as she could.
Right. I mean, you can ask them about the things that involve them and their own personal actions, but you can't necessarily reveal information that might have been said behind their backs. So painful. So painful knowing that you can't really give these people what's coming to them and that they still get fame and they still get jury and all the money that goes with it.
Yeah.
But second thing... Can you please tell me how many of the Big Brother finalists are employed?
Of the Big Brother finalists?
Yes.
As in the final two?
None of them.
Neither
exactly.
one.
Exactly. And I love that.
And third
How many of them were employed before they came into the house?
All of them but Jesse were employed before they came into the house.
I mean, it's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? How many jobs did we lose this season?
I mean, let's run down the list. Aaron and Gina Marie were the first ones.
Fired from the modeling and then the pageant agents. Modeling agency and the pageant circuit.
There's been rumors about Amanda losing her real estate job, though those have not yet been confirmed. Jeremy still has his boating job, but he has also lost his modeling job on the side.
Right.
Andy has lost his teaching job.
Mm-hmm.
Spencer, the only reason he's still employed is because he has union protection, but there's I would say at least a 95% chance that when he finally gets to, you know, meet with his employers and his union rep, he will be out of work.
He was publicly admonished by his company. Yeah,
twice. But again, the company made it clear that by union rules, that was as far as they could go until they talked to him in person. But I can't see any situation where he survives this. So going down the line, Arian.
Freudian slip.
Furyrian slip. Yes. Aaron, Amanda, Andy, Gina Marie, Jeremy, and Spencer. 6 out of 16.
And again, one of them was not eligible because she was not employed.
Yeah.
Comically, via the graphics, she was not employed.
Yes.
Jesse, unemployed. Yay!
Dan Giesling wrote a nice short column after the finale.
Oh, do tell.
And he raised an interesting point. He thinks that maybe some of the racist and bigoted stuff could have... The tide could have been stemmed a little bit by having a returning player in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Not just for the sake of having a lightning rod, but also, you know, someone who's been there before and could just say, hey...
You don't want
You're on camera all the time. Everything you say is getting picked up. Don't make the same mistakes we made, yada, yada, yada.
And thank you for continuing my argument for not having returning players ever. Not that I'm always against it, but we want the show to be candid. We want to see people for who they really are. Even if it is this ugly. Ideally, they just don't cast people this ugly.
Exactly.
And we want many of them.
We want an organic social experiment. What we don't want is casting, overlooking such obvious, you know, red flags for the sake of drama and or, you know, photogenic ability.
I mean, think about it. You're spending 85 to 90 days in a house confined with cameras taping each and every movement. If someone were to go over the past 90 days and look for the most offensive thing I've said and then broadcast it over the internet, yeah, I'm pretty sure they would find something.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty hard to go 3 months without saying something patently offensive.
Yep.
The thing was, these people did it not once, not 10 times, but over and over and over and over. I mean, you can find litany accounts of it, and most of the times, it was actually directed at people they were living with. It wasn't even like a generic term. You didn't even have to question if it was joking. It was like, oh my god, they actually believe this, and they feel this way. And then, of course, they say, no, I didn't feel that way or think that at all. Then why'd you say it a thousand times?
I mean, I think the most innocuous racist thing that was said in the house was when Jeremy and Amanda a couple of times used the old tired cliche of being Jewed out of something when they're out negotiated, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that hasn't been acceptable for like 30 years, but as far as I'm aware, Amanda's the closest thing to a Jewish person in the house, so there was no one really to direct it at.
Okay.
But contrary to your argument of why there should never be returnees, Dan's column continues that this realization is likely to reflect on the producers as well, and he predicts that we will never see another season of only original players.
And that's maybe a fair argument. It definitely won't happen right away, and even with this season, it's odd to say it was all newbies when they did stick Alyssa in the house.
Mm-hmm.
She's kind of a pseudo-hybrid in the middle.
Yeah.
But, hey, if it happens, I just think it's happening for the wrong reasons. It's not because an all-newbie season can't work. It's because you cast these fools.
Yep.
And again, you just can't go for that. For how much time is spent in casting, and I have to think this is a double-edged sword. I think part of this is what Robin Cass and her team found, and that they have a responsibility to bring outrageous personalities. That's one thing that, frankly, you can't deny. She did her job mm-hmm. on that. She found outrageous personalities. The problem is, she presents not just 14 or 16 players for any given season and says, hey, take these guys. She's presenting 30, 40, 50 players to CBS executives who then get to have a good piece of the final say.
Mm-hmm.
In yes, I like this person, no, I don't, and these are the people that got chosen.
Yeah.
I'd be very interested in finding out who number 16, 17, 18, 19, so on and so forth was that missed out.
I mean, I know from my own experiences with the casting process on the show, I won't reveal too much, because all this is pretty public knowledge anyway, But if you go, if you get a callback, whether you apply via tape or by a casting call, if you get a callback, that's the semifinal round right there. And there's, they always approximate around 800 people each year get to that level.
Mm-hmm.
And then the final round of auditions is 45 to 50. And they fly, and then those 45 to 50 are flown out to LA at the show's expense. And they are kept in sequester in a hotel room for further interviews, psychological exams, medical exams, and what have you, for up to 2 weeks. Some of them are let go because the decision's already been made up or down on them. Some of them are kept the entire 2 weeks. And more importantly, there's no interaction between the prospective candidates. They all see each other. So that once they're in the house, they recognize each other, having seen them wandering the halls of the hotel room. But they're not allowed to talk. They're not allowed to interact in any way.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's not just that we ended up with this 16. We started with however many tens of thousands, whittled that down to 800, and then whittled it down again to 50, and then somehow ended up with this 16.
Right. So back to the show this season.
Yes.
At what point did the show go over the tipping point of, there's no one here left that I'm willing to watch with?
Oh, when McRae was voted out.
Did McRae deservedly get voted out?
In the sense that, you know, his game was over the moment Amanda was gone and the Exterminator Alliance outnumbered him. I don't think there was really anything he could do short of just winning every veto in HOH to the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had been painted into a corner. So in that sense, yes, he deserved to go. But at the same time, the Exterminators was one of the most infuriating alliances I've ever conceived.
And why?
Well, first of all, three of the no longer employed are among them.
Mm-hmm.
Judd was the only likable one in the bunch.
And even Judd, technically, be it via our amazing race rule, should not get a chance to win because he was out. Once you're out, you're out. There is no second opportunity.
Let's be clear, that's your rule, not mine.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I thought the brigade was annoying with all of Enzo's little meow meow jokes. Pump and squirt. Pump and squirt. This is the name of an 80s porno, okay?
Have you verified that?
No, but I'm probably
pretty
right.
Sure it was like 70s, but okay.
and again, it's not just that the Alliance is, you know, has these kind of idiosyncrasies about them, but it's the idea that they're so self-righteous about it. I mean, again, comparing this to the previous worst of all time season 9, you had Team Christ. Yes, Team Christ. The people who were all terrible, terrible people, but because they ascribed to some warped version of Christianity, thought that they were somehow better than other people, that they were more deserving, that it was literally a case of good versus evil.
Mm-hmm.
And yet among that alliance were the eventual winner who used his winnings to, you know, sell to set up a drug ring selling OxyContin to kids. You know, Boston Maddie, who helped in that drug ring and beat up his pregnant girlfriend. You know.
Yes, let's remind you. We have had violent, despicable people get cast on the show previously.
But back
up to Justin Siebig holding a knife. Yeah.
but because they like Jeebus, they were somehow better. You know, that. So same thing with the Exterminators making. I was like, oh, we're gonna get rid of all the rats and snakes and cockroaches. I was like, you've got a racist, a Nazi, and a self-loathing gay. How the hell are you any better?
Well, let's talk about this for a second, and not necessarily the people, but this is one of the big questions that I've raised this to a lot of people I run into on the street. The MVP twist.
Yes.
The MVP twist was sold as meaning that nobody would be safe, and frankly, using the words of Rachel Riley, it was intended to force floaters to get a life vest.
Julie even said it in the premiere.
This was supposed to be a game changer and make sure that you had to play to win.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anyone who made even like Final Five or Six that couldn't be considered a massive floater? I mean, it seems like we got bigger floaters than ever towards the end of this game.
And again, this is not to say the floating is a bad thing.
It's a strategy. It is. It's not the most enjoyable one to watch, but it's a strategy, a valid one.
And that's the one thing that makes Andy's victory somewhat satisfying. He was, as we've described, an active floater. He stayed behind the scenes, but he was able to manipulate enough of the situations to get his way and keep his hands clean and never be legitimately considered for eviction.
Mm-hmm.
That's what a floater should be. But again, the intent was to not have any floaters because we somehow think that the game is nothing more than competitions at this stage, despite the fact they brought in Will Kirby to moderate the jury.
The one person who proved you win the game socially by making people do what you want.
It's like Will Kirby is the ultimate floater. If you want, by today's definition, that floater just means not winning every competition.
Yes.
He Will Kirby's the ultimate floater, but he's also the greatest player of all time.
But that's the thing. He was an active player during the game. Just because he wasn't winning competitions did not mean he wasn't playing the game. And if you compare Will to Handy, come on, it's night and day.
I'm not saying it's not, but again, what I'm saying is the idea of floater means that you're not winning the competitions, whereas which means by that definition, Will Kirby qualifies, and no one would ever call Will Kirby a floater.
Yes.
At least no one's sane, which means any of the contestants would have called him a floater.
Is there a way to create a Big Brother season where everyone is forced to be an active player and can't float? Is there a twist that people are missing?
Maybe there was a way to basically say, you know, here's your money line. I'll give you an example, and this is a lame example, but you'll get where I'm going with this. The very, very, very short-lived game show adaptation of You Don't Know Jack.
Yes.
Had each week a million-dollar question.
Yes, there,
and as soon as Paul Rubin started reading the question, some absurd dialogue, the clock would keep ticking down, with the idea being as soon as you ring in and get the answer right, you get all that money. And it would, by the time the question was done, it would drop down from $1 million to, like, you know, 300. I would like a similar thing in this game where each person had a money line. And you could either start it at $500,000 or basically just, you know, start it with their weekly stipend of $750.
Mm-hmm.
And just like losing house points in Hogwarts, whenever you do something that's not really the game, you lose money.
It'd be interesting to see what you would qualify as that, but...
Let's see. Every time you bang... Hell, every time you make out. I mean, believe me, as much as McCray was a likable character and a solid game player, at least with theory, the moment he shacked it with Amanda, I knew his game was over. Game over at that point.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, if you come up with a lame name for your alliance, there's $100 off right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing. These people don't realize it's more important to be in alliance than to name it. The name is for the name is for cameras only.
And you know these last two, three things you've said, that's the reason why they got on the show and you haven't.
I know.
Sadly.
Well,
true.
That and the fact that I probably have the combined weight of three of your average female players.
And that could be a problem as well. And by players, you mean they're inflatables? Yes.
Yes, of course. Okay. Yes, my 260-pound frame is probably easily three of them. Yes.
Happy with the final challenges?
To a certain extent. I mean, the final vetoes, you know, the penultimate HOH, those are, you know, tried and true, nothing wrong there. The final HOH, you know, it's the same endurance thing they always do. This time they just did it, you know, on roller skates, which was kind of funny, but really it was more to say, hey, let's make sure that Gina Murray wins the first stage and that Spencer, who being the big guy, has no chance. You know, he's just awkward and heavy. Mm-hmm. So he's going to go down. The second leg. I liked it that for once you could get it wrong. Like the second leg of the final HOH has not really allowed you to get things wrong since season 10.
Right.
At the same time, again, I think they kind of rigged it against Spencer because it was wall climbing.
Mm-hmm.
And And you and I both like wall climbing, you know.
Sure.
But if you've never done that, after your first trip, the pain is excruciating. And he had to do it 13 times. 14 really, because they had to put Judd up twice. That, you know, he literally fell off the wall like 3-4 times just because he, you know, a guy with his frame, you know, a bottom heavy frame, he doesn't have the upper body strength to climb up the wall. I don't mind the idea of, you know, searching a bunch of you know, props for the evicted house guests and putting them in order, but to add that extreme of a physical element to it, especially with nothing attached to it except for going to part three. I mean, hell, Mike Boogie won a card for being suspended in air for 2 minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That was a bit much. Part three, however, it's the same thing. It's the jury questions, you know, the jury statement bit.
Right.
But
the execution.
Exactly. Instead of having it in the living room, you know, with
mirror,
the tiny...
the mirrors, with the AB completely visible...
With the mirrors, that's how Dick won. It was like as soon as he got a 1-point lead on Zach, he just waited for Zach to answer and matched it by looking at the reflection. They held it in the backyard, and they even came up with a fairly clever prop of them standing on justice scales and literally tipping the scales as the score changed. That was cute. At the same time, I'm thinking to myself, wow, you paid for that, but you won't pay for HD cameras.
The fact that Big Brother is still SD, what the hell?
It's been the only SD program on network TV for at least 3 years.
Kind of crazy, but it exists. What do you do? Here's what you do. You wait for Big Brother 16. What should we expect for Big Brother 16, Bill?
Honestly, I don't know. I mean, there were some things that... we're actually okay about this season, like the fact that there was no Pandora's Box.
Yeah. How about that? Shocking.
You know, apart from, you know, interview segments during eviction nights, we didn't have any previous house guests coming back. I mean, we had Brittany for the intro to a veto competition, and of course, her association with this season is why her baby has cancer.
So sad.
I know. I mean, I believe in karma, and it's really hard to believe in karma when something that bad happens to somebody that good, yet Gina Marie has $50,000. It really is hard to maintain that kind of a belief when you're faced with that kind of evidence.
Right.
But I like the idea of a jury of nine, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Because, again, that allows for more variables in the voting, and hopefully a lot more transparency once you get to the jury. Because with seven people, you know, depending on whose alliance comes out on top, you just have seven people who are pissed off.
Sure.
The one good thing about the Exterminators is that it came along very late in the game, so that the jury was made up of people from that alliance and from previous alliances and from previous alliances of that alliance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So they're all trading notes. They're all trying to figure out what happened, you know?
Sure.
So something beyond that stupid little DVD that the evictee brings in, just showing the competitions, you know, showing the house events, that can add a good perspective. And again, bringing Will Kirby in to moderate the jury, and having him point out that, you know, yes, Spencer was the ultimate pawn on and off the block 8 times before he was finally evicted in third place, but he never once got any blood on his hands. And Will Kirby has to point that. Will points that out. That is valid.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm not telling you how to vote, but that is valid. You know, honestly, when Andy won the final HOH and voted Spencer out, I thought for the first time we were going to see a woman win over a man, which still never happened, because previous jury segments had led me to believe that everybody wanted Gina Marie to win, and my thought was, why? It was like, you know, I thought you guys weren't allowed to have drugs in the house. You know,
such a tough position to sit there and say that, frankly, either person is deserving at that level. You know, we tend to hold a high bar on this podcast for what a reality winner should have to achieve. So under that bar, we probably wouldn't have given it to either. But even then, if you consider the gap between players, I think you have a personal favorite.
And again, this is why I love the idea of Will moderating the jury before they came in for finale night. He didn't tell them who to vote for, but he made it very clear. Some of you guys are thinking on emotional levels, and some of you guys are thinking on logical levels. It's up to you which wins out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to vote on an emotional level, don't pretend that you're voting for who you think is the best player. Just say you're voting on an emotional level.
Sure.
And if you're thinking on a logical level, you know, you may vote against your best friend, but tell them that afterward, you know?
Two things I'd like to see. And these are my two, like, kind of personal little wishes. Mm-hmm. One, I still want a season where the twist is when you vote someone out, they're not evicted. You can't win, but this person's stuck in the house and you still have to deal with them. So in essence, voting them out means they can't win the $500,000 and I will take away their voting privileges. However, I will still give them the ability to compete in competitions and do what they want with HOH, nominate whoever, etc., etc. I think that would be a twisted season. Second, and maybe more interestingly, where you said we had a great moment here with Will Kirby moderating the jury.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to bring back returning house guests so bad, I wouldn't mind it if we had an all-star jury. If the entire cast knew from advance that, hey, these people are going to be your jury, and they're going to come in and out of the house, and they're going to be watching the feeds constantly, and they're going to be the ones determining who deserves to win this game, that might be the kind of thing it would take to make sure people made certain moves, knowing that, hey, it's not about a bitter jury. It's these are the people who are judging me, and these are some of the best players the game has ever had.
Yeah.
So I need to show myself to be among them.
I guess the question of how to do that would be, would they be allowed to sit at home and watch the show, or would they be sequestered in the jury house the whole season?
I mean, as far as the jurors?
Yes.
The all-star jurors?
The all-star jurors. What amount of access do they have to the game at large?
One, I would make a commitment to them that they are watching feeds constantly. You know, there will never be a time when at least one of the jurors isn't watching the feeds. On top of that, I always want to have one of the jurors in the house. So literally, like, they'll come and visit for a week. Kirby will visit for a week and just kind of, like, sit there and laugh at people. Like, really, that's what you want to do? Okay, go ahead. Do what you want. I think that would provide such humor. Could you imagine Brittany, like, being like, really? These people think this is how you play the game? Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's see what happens at the end of the season.
And I like that you phrased it like that, because I'd almost want to modify your idea slightly.
Okay.
Rather than having a jury of all-stars, have an entire first week where no one gets voted out, but basically have the Big Brother Masterclass. Teach these people how the game is played. Have the greatest players of all time sit there with them for a week and teach them how to play the game. Because one of the things, again, I was afraid that Gina Marie was going to win. Thankfully, when the jury convened at finale night, Helen made an offhanded comment that she said that she thought Andy had the votes.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been smart for him to be the last one voted out. So that let me know, okay, fine, you know, they came around and Andy's going to win. But those previous jury segments, you know, they keep saying, well, Gina Marie made the biggest move of the season by getting rid of Amanda. No, she didn't. Just because you're HOH does not mean the move is yours. Just because you're the tie-breaking vote as HOH does not mean the move is yours.
Mm-hmm.
It means you get the blood on your hands, yes, because you're in the position of power. But at the end of the day, the rest of the house is allowed to vote however the hell they want. And if they decided to vote out, you know, whoever Amanda was up against, I don't even remember who she was up against, to be quite honest. I think she was up against Alyssa, but I don't even remember.
Shows you how worthless the season was. Go ahead.
Or she was up against Spencer. Sorry, she was up against Spencer.
Mm-hmm.
If they decided just to vote Spencer out, no one is saying, oh, the biggest move of the season was Gina Marie getting Spencer out. No one is saying that.
No. I'll modify your idea. Because I do like where it's going, but this would be an amazing little touch to it. Where I'm saying each one of them should come in for a week during the season.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we make that a luxury reward prize? You can win coaching with that person. You can win all the information that person knows from being in the house for a week. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's their choice whether or not to tell you. You know, if you're an utter dick, maybe they will lie to you, but...
Because that's also a good idea, because we kind of had the chance of this last season when we had the coaches come in, but of course, one, they were competing for their own prize,
mm-hmm.
and then eventually competing for the main prize when they hit the reset button.
Right.
And two, the only real coaching that went on was, for the most part, them telling their players who to vote out next, or who to nominate when they were HOH. And that's... again, that's shifting the idea, the game theory in the wrong direction. You know, putting too much emphasis on it just being about winning competitions and having the power in the house, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the finale, since
go
you
ahead.
Didn't watch
it. Wrap it up at the finale, go ahead.
Since you didn't watch it, the jury questioning was, I think, the second highest point of the season.
Okay.
Because you have the final two sitting there, Gina Marie looking like something that just washed up outside of Sapphire. And then
that's
you got Andy
club for those of you who don't know.
And Andy's sitting there, you know, dressed up in a plaid shirt, and he's wearing a bow tie because bow ties are cool. And then, even though there's a jury of nine, they only have seven questions. Like, they have the six they agreed upon, then Spencer gets to ask one just right off the bat. And Candace and a couple others admitted afterward that they set the questions up for Gina Marie to fail. Like, they worded them intentionally so that she would get them wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But Amanda's question to Gina Marie was one of the most special moments ever.
And what was that question, Bill?
Apart from getting me out, what was the biggest move you made?
And cue Jeopardy think music.
Do you know what the answer was?
No, I don't know what she said.
She said her biggest move was getting rid of Amanda. Amanda teeter up again. No, apart from getting me out, what was it? Gina Marie's answer. No, I thought about getting rid of you beforehand. So that's why it's the... I mean, for the first time in the 90 days of this game, for the first time, I appreciated the fact that Gina Marie used to work in the pageant circuit because she was giving Katie Upton answers.
Oh, my God.
Meanwhile, you have Andy on the other side owning everything he did, admitting to backstabbing people, admitting to lying and getting close and making all these, you know, interpersonal connections, knowing he was going to take them out eventually, apologizing for their hurt feelings, and even admitting that the reason that Gina Marie's here with him rather than Spencer is because, unseen by all of us, on day one, he told Gina Marie that if possible, he was going to take her to the end, on day one. So, in the end, he has the credit of keeping one promise. In the end, he was most loyal to her. And yet somehow the vote ended up 7-2. Yeah, I mean, Judd admitted that he gave Gina Marie a pure sympathy vote, knowing that Andy would win, and Aaron kind of the same way. Like, she knew Andy was going to win, but since they had been together the whole time, she couldn't not give her the vote, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to Andy's credit, he has made Big Brother history because he's the first gay contestant to win. And
yeah.
If we remember back in season 11, Kevin, you know, he was the closest one to do it. He finished in third place, getting voted out on finale night, and he was the one most focused on winning the game because he noted that all the previous gay contestants had made like some kind of glaring mistake that cost him the game, and Kevin's only mistake was, you know, not being able to guess numbers better than Jordan. So Andy at least deserves respect in that regard. I mean, given the final three, he was the most deserving winner. However, given the entire 16, he was maybe eighth. A telling moment at the end, once everything was signed, sealed, delivered.
Right.
First of all, of course, Gina Marie runs straight to Nick as soon as she gets out of the house, and Nick gave her a really nice, friendly hug. But you could tell he was like, "Where's security? Where are the exits? Please tell me there are people armed." apparently, he's gonna go on a date with her for his web show just for the fun of it. But the most telling thing, the audience prize, the $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you didn't even have to see one episode of the show to know who won that.
Anyone but Alyssa?
Yeah, we wish. And of course, Alyssa's so surprised, and she thinks it's because America Loves. It's like, no, You had a built-in voting block thanks to your sister. That's the
Again,
whole
though, I will defend that Alyssa was one of the least offensive parts of this season when she came into it potentially being the most offensive part.
I will give her that much credit. And again, my caveat is, if her sister didn't exist, I would love her. But the final three for the audience vote, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Alyssa obviously won. Second place, not really a surprise, Judd. Judd is the one I would think we can safely say was the most popular character on the show.
Sure.
Third place, Howard.
Amazing that someone who left so early would still point that well.
And it's because since he's been out of the house, he's been the one speaking up against all the racism. He was able to talk briefly about it when they interviewed the pre-jury evictees.
Yes.
During the finale.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell that he wanted to just lay into Gina Marie. He wanted to lay into Aaron. He wanted to lay into all of them. But you could tell he was being coached from the sidelines. Like, just say how you feel. Keep it positive and don't go off anybody. And he was like, okay, fine. I didn't go off on them in the house. I'm not going to go off on them now, you know? But again, the audience basically decides, like, because this cast mistreated this man so poorly based on nothing more than the color of his skin, for the most part, that there was a grassroots movement, and he got in the top three for the audience vote despite being voted out fourth. That's amazing. And quite honestly, if they ever do bring anybody back from the season, I hope it's him. I liked Judd. I liked McCray. For a while, I liked Amanda until I found out how much of a raving bitch she is. but really, if there's any one person who deserves another shot at this, it's Howard, because he truly did get screwed over by the cast that was put together. And given that he was all Jesus H. Nice before he came into the based on his bio, I really wouldn't have thought that I would have been in his corner, honestly.
But hey, he was one of the highlights of the season, and despite all of the pain and racism that might have been going on and just general bigotry, I don't even want to limit it to race, it was just hatred that was put out there. It was nice to see those moments when you got to see the other side, how it affects people, how they fight against that. And, yep. I mean, that conversation that he had with Candace in the have-not room, I think that might have shed more light on race in this country, if people paid attention to it, than any other show has in multiple years. Yep. So credit to Big Brother for actually exploring that once the public basically forced them to do it. But there is something to be said about a reality show being real. Mm. So we shouldn't be afraid of that. If people act a certain way, show them for how they act, good or bad.
You know, I mean, we talked a little bit about, you know, the kind of twists and stuff that we'd like to see in the show, but really, if they're going to make improvements for next year, I say keep the 90 days, keep the 16, and keep the jury of 9. I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm even okay with them trying the MVP again if there's no returning players and no connections to returning players.
Okay.
But I would rather see 16 Howards than even one more Aaron.
Sure.
Obviously, for the love of God, get up to HD.
And
again, do what you did this season. That was one of the few good things. Any returning player involvement, use it for commentary purposes only. I mean, the only lame returning part was the stupid little segment they did with Brendan and Rachel and Jeff and Jordan. You know, basically checking in on the couples to pass judgment on Amanda and McCray, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, but I like the fact that they had Dan and Jeff and Will in for real commentary. Like, to literally, look, this is the state of the game. These are the people who are playing it. These are the ones who aren't. I basically think of Big Brother as a courtroom. I want expert testimony.
Mm-hmm.
That was actually, I think, a happy accident.
Yeah, and hey, hopefully they look at those happy accidents and turn them into purposeful ones in upcoming seasons. As we wrap this podcast, I will give you one piece of homework, Mr. Hammond.
Okay.
And that homework is, what would a season look like if it was just all America's Favorites? Go back and we'll talk about that on a future podcast. Okay. What that would be. We could make a good season out of that. And even eliminate the... I won't say eliminate anyone. Let's just see how it falls. But you know how it works, folks. If you want to keep in touch with The Reality Rant, we're here. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. You can email us. Do what you want. But most importantly, keep downloading the podcast. Keep listening to us. And you know what? Keep watching these shows. Because now that Big Brother's off and Survivor's on, the status of reality on CBS is vastly improved. So... until next time, I'm Eric Pierce of GameShowNewsNet. That's Bill Hammond, and this edition of The Reality Rant, Big Brother Rap, is...
Bow ties are cool.